You can't do everything.
I can't do everything.
I didn't come for the homemade scones.
Do you want to unlock our car?
Well, let's not pull back.
So that's Sive. She's a Springer Spaniel. She's only one. So she's very, very young still. And then that's Belle. And Belle is sort of 13 or 14 years
aged,
old. So she's aged. She's aged. An aged one.
She's aged well.
Hasn't
she?
Has, actually.
Yeah. She's beautiful.
She has. Not too bad at all. She's a little bit deaf and a little bit kind of blind. So she's...
Yeah.
But you can still find her way to food.
Food, if needs be. So...
Because
she's actually hungry, she hasn't been fed yet, so she's thinking this is all for her.
The kitchen was re-added on because originally the house, the plan form of the house, the original kitchen and living room was the main room in the older part, and you know, it had the large arched hearth. And so when we came here first, that was our kitchen too and dining room. But yeah, we had three small kids, and wasn't really adequate, and certainly couldn't accommodate the sort of modern kitchen demands
that a wife has.
Exactly. So we added on, but also give an extra bedroom. So
yeah, and a bathroom upstairs.
Bedroom. So that allowed us just to build a relatively modest kitchen on at the back.
Mm. Yeah. So, do you want to come out? Come on, we go out and I'll feed you. Good girl. Where the bicycles and the wood for the fire is stored as well. And it's got a very low ceiling, so you just have to mind yourself coming in and out. And that was from the one of the sheds that had been cleared away, a railway carriage. It says to carry 9 tons. A little bit of stuff done in the garden. Today we're recording one of our Heritage at the Heart podcasts, and we're here with Kevin and Claire in their lovely home that is a traditional farmhouse that they've, I suppose, made slight adjustments to and reared their family here over the last, how many years, Kevin?
15
years. And it's a beautiful house, and it's always struck me as a really good example of how these lovely modest houses can be used for a family, and very happy family home. And so we're here to talk about traditional buildings in Monaghan and how there are so many of them just laid by the wayside and not reused and not even thought about or considered that they could be reused as homes. And of course we're in a housing crisis at the moment, and we're also in a sustainability crisis too, so that we should be thinking about reusing existing structures. For all the carbon and energy that's embodied in them, but also because these buildings were built with local materials, they were built using local skills and knowledge that people had from hereabouts. So they're very much a living heritage and something that we shouldn't just gloss over. So today we're here to talk with Kevin and Claire, and we're going to have a lovely cup of tea now and a cup of coffee, hopefully.
They're very good at that.
Yeah.
said to me that he can go and read his
Yeah, it's like people going on an expedition to a planet where aliens are, and it's written in a first person account.
Right. That's so interesting. It's a very interesting book. It's, what's the name of it? Expeditions?
Yeah, Expedition.
Look at these cool drawings, aren't they, class? Oh, this is fantastic. It's this book.
Yeah.
The mother. Yeah, this is the old photograph of your house, Mita.
Was that before we lived in it?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's 1984.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I don't want to say way before your time, Mita, but I'm going to say way before your time.
Yeah, it was way before.
When your parents were young ones.
Well, we had no idea there was a little farmhouse in Monaghan with our name on it.
Yes. That's a lovely photo. Like, they still do those photographs, don't they, with airplanes that fly over.
Yeah, it's still, they do actually.
That was a real thing, Mita, like back in the 80s, because nobody was able to get up on airplanes, where they would, somebody would fly around, a photographer, take aerial shots of your house, and then come around in the evening time and say, would you like to buy this picture?
The photograph, you know, shows, you know, how the house evolved, more or less, but it also had an interesting clue. If you notice on the roof, the colour tone is different in the slating.
The colour tone is different in the slating.
It's two
it looks like it's painted on extra on the side.
Yeah. But what that actually reveals is how, partly how the house evolved, which was confirmed in the fabric of the building. So like most vernacular buildings, the sort of essence of the building is that they evolve over time and slowly and as needs change. Mm. And in a way, we're part of that kind of change and transition. So rather than say a dramatic intervention or alteration to the building, it sort of evolved with us, I think, in terms of use. So from what we found when we had to undo a lot of the works, the modernisation works that were done before us, it allows us to see some of the building, to tell the story in a way of it. And we know from example the ordnance survey that the building was here in the 1830s. But when the walls here had been dabbed and plasterboarded, so that covered up stonework. So we had to take that off because it was trapping the dampness. But it revealed the various openings in the building. And we could see from the proportions of the windows, location of the windows and the doors, that they had changed over time. And then in the attic, in the what's now the bathroom, was an outbuilding. That's the building was here. It would have been maybe a cowhouse, wasn't attached internally or connected internally. But the attic there, if you look in the gable, still has the whitewashed gable of the original story and a half house. So like most cottages, you know, they evolved as single story buildings with a bedroom loft at that level. So there's a window in the gable there. And then from the arrangement of the windows outside, you could tell that they raised it fully to two stories in part. Just over part of the building, and then at a later phase, obviously needed more accommodation and raised it again.
Yeah.
And each alteration, you know, is very much in the same style, and you know.
And it was as they needed it. It was purely based on need, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So function, possibly, so. You know, a family growing, you know, a marriage, you know, and you know, family grows and needs change. And so probably the first sort of expansion of the house was that portion, and then later expansion.
So are you saying that, so like we're looking at a photograph here, so when we're looking at a photograph, what we're looking at the moment is a two-story, this is the photograph from 1984, so we're looking at a two-story farmhouse with a porch, and then some outbuildings like a byre or a cow house and another little barn attached.
Yeah.
And then a front wall around the front yard.
Yeah.
So it's quite compact. And three and chimneys on it, or two chimneys?
There are two chimneys, yeah. So the central chimney would have been the main chimney raised up. So it served the arch
behind us,
the kitchen. So the arch is still there today.
Here.
And the ironwork for the crane is still there.
So a crane, for people if you don't know what a crane was to hold all the pots and things like that over the fire. It's an iron piece made by the local blacksmith.
And
which was just up the road.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it's just up the corner,
a mile from this house is where the blacksmith's was.
So everything really in terms of the material for the building would have been sourced locally. So,
and was the building, is the building, so the building, when you took back the daub and the plaster work and everything, it's stone?
It's stone with very little mortar.
Right.
It's almost dry stone, but there's mortar is made with clay and mud.
Right.
So that would have been determined by the availability of lime. Now, lime would have been produced plentifully in this area because this was part of the Shirley estate, and they built several lime kilns,
yes,
as the Bath estate, the other part of the parish, did. But, you know, the cost associated with producing lime, and lime probably was prioritised for agricultural use,
yeah,
as well. So clay would have been a very common mortar, and certainly you could put your hand through sections of the wall here, as indeed could other creatures.
Yeah.
But one advantage of that is that the house has always been home to more than ourselves.
And still is.
And more attractive creatures. So we've always had robins, starlings, sparrows, jackdaws, wrens nesting here. Mice too.
We've had
occasional rats, but they're less welcome. But having dogs usually deters.
Keeps all of that at bay.
Deters them.
Yourself. Okay. And there's bread and butter if you don't want pan of chocolate.
Would you like to share my
Omidas had his.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I'll cut it in half. I wouldn't make a spitey gent.
Like in Lady and the Tramp when they're sharing the spaghetti.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's nice.
But we're sitting here now. At the moment we're sitting in one of the front rooms of the house. So I suppose the house originally was one room deep.
Yeah.
Would that be right? So you'd have the porch at the front and then you'd be straight into two rooms, or?
Yeah, basically the plan of the house would be two rooms, two up and one or two down. Originally it was probably just one, a bedroom loft. So you would have the main kitchen as the hearth of the house in every sense, the hearth where the fire was and where all the industry took place, and then a sort of living room which possibly also was a bedroom, and then but a loft for extra accommodation. So the stairs, you know, the stairs that's in this room now, in what's now our dining room, it would have been the kitchen originally, would have served that expansion of the house.
Yeah.
But originally the loft here would have just had
a ladder
going up.
And
you know, with a relatively low ceiling.
Low ceiling,
And here you see that the ceiling is timber sheeted, as most of the ceilings would have been in the house. And we put back timber sheeting here.
Yeah. And you can see that, I mean, I was just going to, the light coming in the window is really lovely. And I think it's partly because of the window, the way they're deep walls, obviously, but the way they're revealed back, or
the walls are splayed, and that's something that develops architecturally over time, and certainly by the 19th century, when walls are being built to a depth like this of about 2 foot, they splayed back, so they angled the walls in the window to reflect more light. And the windows here, you see, are timber sash windows.
Yeah.
When we had come here, they had been replaced. They had been replaced probably at least twice in the history of the more recent history of the house. So the original windows in the house would have been timber sash windows, but they had been replaced with casement windows probably in the 1950s, when we know lots of work were done, and then PVC was put in some cases. So we.
But that's the original window size.
That's the original window size, and the pane division. So there's 8 panes over 8.
Yeah.
So the proportion. So there are elements within traditional vernacular buildings that borrow from more formal architecture. So you see influences within that. But fundamentally, the building is designed and built by the person who is building it, and the materials are gathered locally. So the way in which traditional buildings, I think, satisfies that they reflect the demands of the occupiers who built them, the needs that they had, and they therefore, because they're using local materials, they sit comfortably in the landscape. So yeah. A traditional building is almost the same sort of arrangement as the sort of the robin's nest to the hedgerow. You know, it belongs, it reflects, you know, the sort of the needs and the materials. And then the sort of the sense of place, the you know, fitting in and belonging.
Yeah, they're often located in very sensible locations from the point of view of even weather and aspect and topography, aren't they? So because people were operating within a resource constraint, that they chose sites that were less windy or were sheltered or had less frost and all those kind of things as well, didn't they?
And it does reflect that awareness yeah. of the seasons, you know, the world around and how the passage of time and the seasons change and the climate. And, you know, we're all made conscious of climate, but, you know, living traditionally, you have to be aware of it. Yeah. And the point of a home is that it's a fundamental
shelter.
Fulfillment of shelter. Yeah. And so when you look at vernacular buildings like this one, it's south facing. It has, it's sort of positioned set back from the road, not that the road wouldn't have been very busy
now,
or in terms of the demand, but it's set back. It has a garden in front. And the garden was functional in ways that, were obviously linked to
how the house was used.
For example, the wall outside the front, which bounds the road, has recesses set in it, and there were for the beehives and the woven skeps that would have been used to keep bees and produce honey. And then the way in which the buildings are arranged, the house is sheltered really on either side of the walls of the building. So there is a sort of coziness, a comfort
really
created
cozy,
within
yeah.
the buildings and the arrangement that's very deliberate.
So we're sitting in a lovely room here. It's a beautiful dark navy colour, I suppose, is it? With lots of, you know, nice drawings and paintings and things around. And the lovely delf and everything. I mean, there's a beautiful atmosphere in here. You know, how did you come to, you know, design or gradually make your room evolve like this? I mean, it's just so natural.
Yeah, well, I think that probably is the right word to use. It was a natural evolution. It wasn't sort of a decided in advance type thing. I think we realised that the rooms were small and dark and there was no point fighting that. I don't think, you know, litres of white emulsion would have made any difference to this space. So we embraced the dark, basically.
Yeah.
And it actually makes, even in the summertime, the rooms don't feel dark and oppressive. They just feel sort of reassuring in the same way as they do in the wintertime, you know? So it always has a nice atmosphere. Yeah.
You know, that you can.
And that's really helped by
in different ways,
candlelight, for example, in the autumn or the winter. Like one of my favourite things anyways when I come down in the winter time is to light the candles in the morning before we have breakfast. And even that, it isn't a very big thing to do, but it totally changes the atmosphere of the day, you know. It makes it very kind of gentle feeling to the day. But I think in this room anyway, it's a little bit more formal than the other ones because it's panelled, and then the panelling is painted a quite rich blue, a deepish blue. And, you know, the gilded light that's on any of the picture frames, you know, really kind of just then stands out in whatever light is coming in the window. And it was a very natural kind of slow evolution with the house, because as Kevin was saying, this room actually wasn't a dining room when we moved in first, so it had a totally different feel and function. And then when we built our kitchen, we were able to make this room, which is sort of like a through room because the stairs and the doors to the other rooms are off this room as well. So this room became our dining room, which then allowed us to make it feel a little bit, well, it's not grand, but it's a little bit more formal than
feel a little bit more formal. But yeah, I think you're right, it's beautifully enclosed. There's a lovely sense of enclosure and warmth and comfort in this room.
you know.
Yes, and for a room that technically is like something that we go through to get to other rooms, which could just become kind of like a glorified passageway. It doesn't have that feel at all. Yeah. And in fact, Mida and I spend a lot of time in here because we homeschool in here. Obviously, all our family meals are in here. So there is quite a lot of, you know, just family time spent in this room as well.
Well, it's still the heart of the...
It is very much. Yeah, and having the stove in here actually as well means that it's a big draw. Yeah. Having heat, a heat source in a room is nice as well. So, yeah.
And the panelling, the choice of panelling was, you know, practical as well as, you know, aesthetic. The walls, said, have been done with plasterboard and dabs, so that had to come off.
And why, just to clarify, like the reason why you took off the plasterboard was because it was retaining damp, isn't
it? Yeah, it retained the moisture, so it wasn't allowing the structure to breathe, which of course is you know, fundamental with traditional construction, especially with the use of lime or with clay mortars.
Yeah.
And so it allowed us obviously to inspect the fabric and see what condition it was in. So there were issues with damp being trapped. So rather than plastering over lime plaster, we'd sort of adopted a vernacular sort of approach to it in terms of the kind of materials that would have been used. So I got simple 9-inch boards, and then I myself, you know, formed the tongue groove pattern in it and lined the walls. It also allows to put a breathable membrane. So
between the wall and
The timber. So the timber has a dual function. More than dual. You know, it's breathable. It also insulates the wall, so the room is cosy and more comfortable as a result. So we're modernising, if you like, in terms of the comforts of the house without sacrificing the integrity of it. So even in doing that, it meant that we didn't interfere with the wall structure. We didn't compromise or have to make changes to that to accommodate this. So this is all removable. It's reversible in terms of the rules of, if you like, conservation, that any intervention you make is in theory reversible. Not that you would necessarily want to do that, but it just means you're not losing something in adding to it, but you're gaining.
Yeah.
And that you could go back and read the building as it was originally by taking away what we've added to it. And in a sense, that is what the building has taught us, because we've been able to read all the different changes that other people have made because of the way in which they adapted and changed and used materials.
And just like on that, do you feel, is it nice to live in a house that other people and families have previously lived in and reared their families in over probably 200 years? Like, do you find a nice continuity in that you're now rearing your family here?
Very much so.
Yeah,
I definitely feel that. Because, as I was saying to the boys as well, like, you know that people have lived and died here, but that's kind of the meaning of everything, isn't it? Is that
the seasons,
you are in
passage
a family.
Of the seasons, it's the,
yeah, everything. And to know that there were, you know, children here before our children, and hopefully there will be children after our children have grown up, and just to know that there were other families in this house is actually very, very nice. Yeah. And it isn't, I mean, I know the house is old, and I mean, some people might find older buildings a little bit, you know, scary or whatever, but it definitely doesn't have that feel here. Just feels like a family home.
Will we take a wee walk outside and look at the house?
Sure.
Yeah, let's
sure. We'll go out through the kitchen.
The kitchen addition is really fantastic, isn't it? Like, it's not overly big or anything, but
door,
it's perfect.
Was the back window?
Which door now?
This doorway.
Oh yeah, this
was
door.
The back window. So, like I was saying, the house really responded to the setting. So, most of the windows are on the front of the house.
Yes.
There's only two windows on the back.
So the front of the house is south facing.
So it recognised that it was north facing.
And then these windows, these were the salvage that you got from a building that was...
These are all, you know, quarry glazed, so diamond patterned cast iron windows.
Lovely.
Basically, I set them into timber frames. And then they have the internal, they have secondary double glazing.
Yeah.
So this, even though the room itself and the extension is designed very much in a traditional style, it is, you know, modern specifications. So this is, you know, insulated cavity block with insulation internally, sheep's wool insulation in the floor and ceiling. So it's the warmest room in the house.
It's lovely,
so probably
cozy.
The kitchen.
Yeah. And,
you know, the secondary glazing is often a way of dealing with historic fabric, so with older windows, so that you don't need PVC and big, you know, expensive...
And when you say secondary glazing, you essentially mean another window frame,
yeah,
or a piece
of
glass.
So you can't even see it, but there's a very thin 10 mil sheet of double glazed fitted in behind the first glazing, if you like, the historic glazing. So that gives you all the performance.
The energy performance,
yeah,
or their energy rating, and that's something people always think about older buildings, don't they? They think they must remember a time when they sat in the draft all day in their granny's house or whatever, and were freezing. But they don't have to be like that.
Yeah,
at all.
You need a balance. You need an element of ventilation. It isn't good to live in a hermetically sealed building. And I do always worry when I hear about people retrofitting buildings, because, you know, sometimes that involves very drastic changes and destruction of historic fabric, whereas, you know, a sensible, well-designed approach can allow you to keep, you know, obviously aspects of the building and its appearance, its character, and have that upgrade. And you know, that's what we've done here and tried to do everywhere. So it's all something we'll probably do with the timber windows, and even temporarily that you can put a double
and then this. This wee door here, I'm going to call it wee because I'm not that tall.
Yeah, it's quite tall.
I'm 5'6". Well, I'll give myself a half. I'm 5'6" and a half. So it's a small door.
We have friends who are both over 6 foot tall, a couple.
Right.
And it's impressive to see them stoop coming.
They have to work hard to get into the building.
Come inside, lovely out here though, and just to say, where did you get your cast iron poles? Are they from a railway station or something?
No, they're actually from a farm building, an old 19th century hay barn, which was taken down.
They're lovely.
And I had these for years, so I had an idea of what I might do with them. So it allowed us to create a veranda outside the back door, you know, just a place storing the wood, dry wood for the fire.
And then your little flat bar gate there. That
yeah, the gates. There was only one historic gate left here, and like that, just things I'd collected over the years that I had been given or found or weren't used. So like even the main gate coming in came from Claire's family home. It was a gate that was no longer in use and very much a locally made gate. So most of them are actually, forged. You know, they're made in local forges.
Yeah. You can see the way it was put together and everything with the little rivets and everything. It's lovely, isn't it? Flat bar.
The best one, my
nice
favourite one,
the
is,
handle.
Is, yeah, the little one here on the side, this gate, because this was a gate that my brother gave me, and it fitted this gap perfectly.
Oh, look at it.
But I love it because it's made entirely from
recycled
from cart. In other words, so this is the cart axle here,
yeah.
And then these are the bands, the straps that would have gone round
so
a cart wheel.
You're pointing at the down bars, shall we say, on the gate, and
so that's held by the eye. So it's like the hinge of the gate.
Yeah.
And then the flat bars are actually made from the metal straps that would have surrounded the timber cart wheel. So this was made in a forge. So it's an example of where, you know, materials lying around, you know, the blacksmith would have worked them. And it has all of the hand forged work. And it has, you know, perfect... It has security features, inbuilt. But you can see the nice hammered decoration there.
Oh, they've stamped a little star on the top of each one of the little bars. Oh, it's gorgeous. Little flourishes like that, I just love.
Again, like that, the shed doors that were here had all rotted away, so I had some traditional doors. And that is the plate from the old railway wagon that had rotted away in the garden to carry 9 tons. So it's just...
Oh, reused
there. But you can see in all the ironwork that would have been all on all of these, the hinges, the catch, that reassuring shake with the catch as it's opened.
Your garden is, I can say, we're standing in very much what I would call a cottage garden. It's beautiful, Claire.
Yeah,
your hydrangeas and everything are lovely, yeah. The tractor there. We're in an agricultural rural area,
exactly.
Which is important for the local economy. And so the porch, so we're looking now at the front of the house.
Yeah,
so what are we looking at here now, Kevin?
So basically you have what many people would recognise as a very typical rural farmhouse. So two-storey building, gable-ended, and with a very irregular positioning of windows.
Yeah.
So you have these sash windows, but they tell their own story, because on the ground floor... the original cottage would have had just maybe two windows either side of the front door, which was actually in a slightly different position to this, and then a thatched roof almost certainly,
yes.
But concealing a loft inside. And then
so maybe the kids were going upstairs into the loft,
exactly.
To bed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the building, so at the west end of the building, you have... a smaller building steps down. It's only single storey. So that would have been a cow house, possibly the dairy,
yeah.
for the house, so where cows brought in and milked,
yeah.
To provide for the kitchen. And then set back from that is another building which has in it quite a large fireplace. That would have been for cooking up meal.
Yeah,
the original,
potatoes maybe,
there,
and things like that.
Or feed.
Yeah.
And then here on this side, which shelters the front garden,
is
a two-storey barn. And this is, if you drive around the local roads here, you'll often see this is the only element of the farmstead that survives.
I've noticed that around here,
yeah.
Actually.
So the house
had a lot of these.
Gone,
several of them.
Or
yeah.
you will see this pattern of homestead, you know, the house with the barns beside it. And often they're abandoned now. There might be a new house, a bungalow built nearby, but you'll find that the old house, and very often they are the single story or the lofted, sometimes modernised, so they're not quite as recognisable as the historic buildings that they are. But the barn here would, on the ground floor, have had, you know, cow stalls in it. And this barn still has the cobbled floors inside. Mm. And then upstairs would have been grain or hay loft.
Yeah.
So this was a very useful building for us, because not only would the lower part accommodate storage and gardening tools and all the paraphernalia of modern life, but upstairs has been converted for an office, a home office. And it retains obviously all of the features that you would expect in a barn. So we took off the asbestos roof. There's natural slate on it now, you know, cast iron gutters, timber windows and doors. And it doesn't have the demands of a modern house, so it doesn't. It has electricity, but it doesn't need plumbing or
yeah,
water.
No, it's so very
it
much shows how you can reuse buildings,
yeah.
On site for all the different purposes, for, as you say, modern family living,
yeah.
Or home working, or, you know, the new,
yes,
thing,
exactly.
That's come very much to the fore. But your garden, I'm assuming it's you, Claire.
No, it is not.
Is it? I don't know, I assumed you,
yeah,
were more
cool. No, I know. Unfortunately, it's not. I'd love to take the credit for that, actually,
oh,
but...
No, it's Kevin.
It
just gorgeous.
Fun.
Oh, isn't that
it
nice?
It's for Claire.
Well, I like to sit out, obviously, and enjoy
beautiful.
The hard work, someone,
yeah.
Else's hard work. Now, the garden is super, it really,
yeah,
is.
It's,
yeah.
Really, I mean,
the box hedging is lovely, yeah.
Yeah, so it is very much planted as a cottage garden, and the birds are...
So, you know, you were talking about the gaps for the hives.
Yeah.
Is that one of them in there?
Yeah, there's two, one here, yes. And one further down.
Yes.
So it's just a recess
in the front wall.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's basically facing north. And I understand that that's the optimum position. I'm talking to beekeepers, the optimum position for placing the bees, because they would have to fly out on them, you know, so they go up over the wall.
Right.
It's, you know, it means you can have bees comfortably in the garden.
Yeah.
Because
very
they
close
need
to
go and
to
go rather,
yeah.
Than...
So they're not going to fly toward the
toward
house.
The house.
They're going,
exactly.
To fly up and over
up
the
and
wall.
Over.
To get over,
exactly.
The wall and then away.
So,
oh, I see. How,
yeah.
Clever. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Traditionally, beehives would have been that classic shape, you know, mm. So a domed woven...
Wickerwork.
Skep.
Yes.
Not ideal in terms of beekeeping, because it means you have to destroy the colony each time. And then often you will find in farmhouses this, you know, in the garden, you'll find the remnants of the later... beehive, the wooden beehive,
yeah.
You know, the congested district board type.
Yeah.
But this shows you just how old the house is. Another, yeah. Indication of how old the house is, the garden level is lower than the road outside. So it shows
so.
That.
Oh, right,
you know,
okay.
House,
so when you're
come
sitting
down here,
at the lower part of the, yeah. Garden, people on the roadway actually can't see you if they pass. Even,
oh,
walking,
yeah.
You're kind of hidden.
Remnants of an old space,
yeah.
Way,
yeah.
In,
yeah.
The wall here.
So, yeah.
And the ground level is about 3 feet.
Yes.
Yeah.
above the ground level.
So don't walk here. Past here talking
no,
about you
no.
then.
No, well, and also we can't talk about people walking past. They could hear us, but they wouldn't see
this
us.
This is a lovely, this wee buyer or whatever lovely. It yeah. was. It's a lovely yeah. building, isn't it?
Yeah, so yeah. there was, and yeah. you saw it in the photograph inside, the 1984 photograph, there was a little building yeah. in this corner here, which was a privy.
Yes,
it was
okay.
gone when we came here, but yes. you see the evidence of it still there, the yeah. little recess, and that would have been where on a cold night you come out with your lantern yeah. or candle and
have a
put it in there.
Yeah.
And there was a box drain yeah. then under here, which took it away. So yeah. that was the plumbing at that stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the little recess there is where starlings and jackdaws have nested.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I can hear.
It's quite deep. It goes right in.
Yeah. And you said earlier on about, you know, sharing your home with nature. And that's a lovely idea, isn't it?
Well, they were here yeah. before us. Yeah. And they yeah. earned their yeah. right to be
Absolutely.
Here and made their home here. So
even though it's quite the this is the laundry shed now. So when you come out and come around the corner, the bird would often come out just yeah. literally in front of you. And, you know, each time it happens, even though you know it's there, it frightens the life out of you, you know, because but it flies out in front of you.
It's very important because, as you know, species decline is a major problem and bird populations have plummeted.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And one of the things that is very satisfying here is that there were no sparrows here when we moved here first, but there's a huge colony. Now, and they're one of the birds that are seriously yeah, at yeah. risk.
It's lovely to hear a gang of sparrows.
Are yeah. wagtails and blue tits that nest in this wall here.
Yeah. And so you're looking it shows at the front it, wall here, you can yeah. see the stonework.
Yeah. And it is so important because modern buildings, you see, exclude all wildlife practically because yeah. they're sealed up. So you don't have the gaps in the gutters or the gaps in the stone wall that allow for that. So here, you know, it's important and we're very conscious, you know, whenever you are doing any
and
repairs
I think
or anything.
Actually the nicest compliment the birds paid us was when they nested actually in the ivy at the front door. And we come in and
they
out of the front
you.
Door.
Each side, a wren and a robin.
A wren yeah. on one side and a robin on the other.
Oh, my word.
And then when the babies were at that really fluffy ball yeah. stage, they all, the mums kind of brought them in and out around the garden and then kind of into the covered bit here at the back of the
big border,
yeah,
the big garden
yeah,
border.
To keep them safe yeah. until they were kind of big enough. But that was so nice because we do come in and out of our front door. It wasn't that we stopped using it or anything, and the nest was literally at your head. Actually, yeah. I think we were there the day they flew first. Yeah. We got to see them as they left the nest.
Well, that was a real privilege.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was lovely. It was lovely to see.
But when you say, you know, a wren on one side and a robin on
yeah.
the other.
Yeah.
Oh,
neighbours.
That's just gorgeous, isn't it? So beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure you have swallows and things like that here then as
yeah.
well, do you?
Yeah, the yeah. swallows, but they used to nest in the farm next door, but they haven't in recent years,
no.
which is a pity. I don't
no.
know.
We've
I think
definitely noticed a drop.
We've noticed
yeah.
a decline in
yeah.
numbers,
yeah.
and it's more than likely the food source because
I've noticed
yeah.
that
that's
well.
The,
yeah.
The problem there. The insects aren't around, not as plentiful. But we do have bats. We have bats in,
yes,
in the roof here. So at
yeah.
dusk, it's lovely to watch them
yeah.
begin to fly out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hopefully the hedgerows will survive long enough to provide the
food
source
for them.
Because
yeah.
that's vital
yeah.
As well.
It's a lovely, yeah. it's a lovely, I hope we're painting a lovely scene for the listeners that we're, like we're standing here at the front of your house in a lovely enclosed garden, which still has loads of flowers here and seeds for birds. I notice in the flowers that are dying off well. And like you can see still some mature trees around here in the landscape as well. But it's a beautiful enclosed, warm setting. It's just it's beautifully done. It's beautiful. It just shows you how nice traditional buildings are.
Yes,
doesn't
absolutely.
It?
Yeah, definitely.
Gorgeous. I don't
They're artichokes.
The Heritage at the Heart podcast series is supported by the Heritage Council and Monaghan County Council.